This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back. Junkies on 106.7 The Fan. We're live on NBC Sports Washington. You want to follow along on TV. Presented by EMP 180 Weight Loss. Structure, accountability, results, the standard for weight loss in the area. It's EMP180weightloss.com. During the break, doing a little radio insider, the Junkies.
Radio insider.
Going to the table, which is in front of CK's office, where clients will drop by food.
Yep.
If there is a food drop. And today, Whitlow's on Wilson provide an amazing spread where there are crab legs. There's these fried chicken sliders.
Oh, so good.
There are macaroni and cheese balls, ribs. So we're all just like going there, and the commercial break, like Jason comes back with this plate. He's like, damn it, the commercial break's almost over.
I mean, my hands couldn't have more Old Bay on them. Eating, cracking crab claws over top of the trash can like a vagrant and just enjoying the spread is really good.
It's one of the benefits of doing a radio show.
Yep.
All right, join us right now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline, and we can talk food with him, maybe. Dave Jagler, the voice of the Nationals on 106.7 The Fan. Dave, what's the best ballpark for food beyond Nationals Park?
Well, Philadelphia. And everyone else is fighting for second place. They have four, maybe five choices as far as the entrees, and they have stuff to do mid-game. They usually put out some fruit and an incredible dessert spread. And on top of the dessert spread, which is usually like some sort of cakes and brownies, they have seven or eight different flavors of Turkey Hill ice cream, different flavors every day. It is amazing. And I'm incredibly – I can talk for a while if you guys want to go eat. I mean, I'll take over the show. It's 9 in the morning. What do you guys – you guys are eating this stuff at 9 in the morning? That's amazing.
What are you going to do? They put ribs in front of your face and crab legs in front of your face. What are you going to do? We eat breakfast at like 5.
I mean, we are famished all right, so by 9
o'clock. This is lunch for you. I got you.
Yeah. This is lunch part one. Yes.
So what was your take on the weekend? Let's go back to Thursday, because that was just an epic comeback, down 9-0, and come back to win that game 14-12, and then what happened on Friday with the walk-off with Mark Reynolds. And, of course, Saturday they explode, score about 100 runs for Max. They finally gave Max Scherzer some runs, and then yesterday wasn't very good. But, you know, you take 3 out of 4. You had to do that. Didn't lose any ground yesterday because both Philly and Atlanta lost. But they did gain 2 games from where they were on Wednesday night, because they were 7 back on Wednesday night. So what was your overall assessment of the weekend?
Well, I think overall, Thursday had to kind of justify what happened on Wednesday, which was the team meeting. Because baseball meetings are a really big deal, because they seldom happen. And the fact that this one happened and it was players only, and from what you read, it was called by Max and he's doing most of the talking. If you go out and you get blown out the day by the Marlins the day after you hold a meeting, then your meeting really falls flat. But I'll give Max a lot of credit. You know, if he was the one who was speaking up and kind of driving that train in the meeting, the next day it was still exceedingly hot. It was 95 degrees and humid, and infielders were out taking ground balls. There was one pitcher out there with the infielders taking ground balls. Max Scherzer was on the pitcher's mound, and when they would hit ground balls to the first baseman, he was over and over running over to cover first, so that the first baseman would have a target to practice their underhand tosses to first. I don't think Max Scherzer needs practice covering first base,
No. But
I think that shows you some leadership. Hey, if you guys are out here sweating in 95 degrees, I'm going to be out here too. Because in general, it's tough for starting pitchers to be leaders on a baseball team because they pitch once every 5 days. But I think that was Max really taking that leadership role. So back to the original question, you're behind 9-0 to Miami, but then you come back and win that game. Then that kind of makes that meeting really, really stand out as important. That hey, this team's going to grind and battle. And so they get that win. And then Reynolds follows it up with the walk-off homer. And obviously has his career day, and then he flew the plane to Pittsburgh and was serving drinks. I mean, this guy did it all. He pitched yesterday, of all things.
Yeah.
So it was a good weekend, but I think still you're seeing the offense in fits and starts. You score 18 one day, two the next day. They had that game in Philly, 17, and they followed up with two and with three. They're not consistently getting the offensive production, but I think the other thing that stands out is that the continued struggles of Gio Gonzalez and Tanner Roark. Tanner couldn't, got you four innings and 100 pitches yesterday, and Gio threw over 100 pitches to get through five innings in game two of that series. So as much as the offense has struggled, the Nationals in the last 31 games have had two wins from starting pitchers.
Wow.
One game they scored 17, and one game they scored 18. Those are the only two games in the last month where they've had a starting pitcher get a win, and this team has always been reliant on its starting pitching and was early in this season. But as they've scuffled in June and now into early July playing better, hopefully the rotation can pick it up, because when you think of Nationals baseball, you think of great starting pitching, and so far that hasn't been there.
Absolutely, and we're going to get to the starting rotation in a second. I just wanted to stick with Reynolds for a second. Mark Reynolds, throughout his career, and he's been in the league for, I don't know, 12 years, 13 years, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been a guy who's has pop. He'll hit you 25 to 35 homers, but he's going to strike out a ton. He's going to hit, 210, 212. But the last few years of his career, maybe he's just learning how to hit,
yeah.
hitting 300 this year, hit 285 a couple years ago in Colorado. Now I realize the ball flies around in Coors, but he's becoming a better hitter, more disciplined. And then my question is, when Zimmerman finally does come back, you essentially have three first basemen. I know Adams can play the outfield, but what does Rizzo do? Do you keep all three of those guys? I would think you have to.
To me, I do. And the reason is you're looking at, if Zimmerman can come back to form and be your starting first baseman, how do you construct your bench? And I think the ideal bench is a left-handed hitter who can hit a home run late in the game against a closer, and that's Matt Adams, and a right-handed batter who's a threat to hit a home run late in the game against a closer, maybe left-handed as a pitcher, and so that's a right-handed hitter, and that's Mark Reynolds. So to me, your ideal bench is those two, and both those guys, while not being great defensive players, do offer other things. I mean, we saw Reynolds play third base yesterday. Adams has played a little bit of left field. But to me, if Defoe is on your bench and you're playing Murphy, then you have Defoe to play multiple positions defensively. The fact that Harper's now playing center field, if Taylor's not in the lineup, he can be your backup center fielder. So to me, Reynolds has a place on this club because of his threat late in games. I mean, when you're managing late game matchups and the pitcher spot's coming up, or if the catcher spot is up and they want to pinch it for that guy, you want a guy who can hit a home run. And the whole reason he pinch hit Mark Reynolds Friday night instead of Michael Taylor leading off the inning, Taylor's more likely maybe to get on base and steal a base.
Mm-hmm.
You then need another hit to drive him in. Reynolds can get you a run with one swing, and that's invaluable late in the game when you're facing these closers who don't give up a lot of hits. Your best chance may be to hit a home run.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get to the rotation as we talk to Dave Jagler, the voice of the Nationals on 106.7 The Fan. Tanner goes four innings yesterday, four earned runs, 10 hits, three walks. That is not extraordinary this year. This has actually become ordinary for him. This is the norm for Tanner Roark. Is there anything you're seeing watching him? Like, what is going on? I was reading maybe it's mechanics. I don't know. What's going on with Tanner?
Yeah. I don't know. And I know that those guys are pour over the video, and they Tanner does it himself, and the pitching coach and the video guys, and they're going to look for little tiny, whether the arm is dropping or the release point is slightly different. I can't tell that from 10 stories up, and I'm not sophisticated enough watching even on the TV monitor. But what I see, to me, when you watch a baseball game and a pitcher, I don't care if it's Scherzer or a Roark or anybody, when you see a pitcher give up a hit, or a big hit or a home run, if you watch the replay, watch the catcher and watch the catcher's glove. And specifically, does his glove not move or does it move? And to me, about 90% of the time when a pitcher gives up a home run, the catcher's glove is moving and moving a significant amount. And I was watching the replays yesterday, and I saw the catcher, Keboom, reaching significantly on a lot of these pitches. And that tells me he's not putting the ball where he wants. And when the catcher is reaching and he's set up on the outside corner and that glove drifts over the middle of the plate, you're going to be in trouble. And to me, I've seen that I've seen that with Gio quite a bit and Tanner too. They just can't put the ball where they want. And in that case, you're better off if the catcher's reaching off the plate and it's going to be a ball than reaching over the middle of the plate. And, you know, he's not getting the knee-high inside corner strike to left-handed hitters that was his bread-and-butter pitch. So that ball's drifting over the middle of the plate and it's getting crushed.
Getting killed.
So how he can fix that, I don't know. But it's something that has been a consistent theme for the last month. You know, Roark is 3-11 now. Early in the season, he was dependable Tanner. You know, he was going 6-7 innings, giving up a couple of runs, and the team didn't score for him. So he might get a tough loss or he might get a no decision. But the last month, both he and Gio have struggled just to get through 5 innings. When you normally count on Tanner for 6 or 7 and Gio for at least 6, and the cumulative effect is this bullpen is really wearing down to the point where you put Justin Miller in a 2-run game yesterday. He's pitched so much, he's not effective, gives up 2. You put Madsen in, he's pitched so much, he's ineffective.
He's been terrible.
You
got
to bring in Mark Reynolds. You got to bring in Mark Reynolds just to finish the inning. And, yeah. And you know, Madsen is an older guy, and he still, you know, is probably in a sense a little bit overworked. But at some point, someone's got to fill these innings. And you know, at times, Davey Martinez is looking down, going, "Well, you know, I'm behind, but I've got to pitch one of my ahead relievers because I've just got to get through these innings." And you know, then the ahead reliever struggles, and you got to bring in another ahead. You know, he was warming up Herrera to bring in that game when it was 10-2 before ultimately they're going with Mark Reynolds. So it just the starters going 4 to 5 innings over and over just has this net effect that impacts the entire club.
And tonight with Jeffrey Rodriguez going, you just don't know what to expect from him. So you may see that same situation tonight in Pittsburgh. He may only last 3, 4, 5 innings, and then they have to go to the pen again.
Yeah, and then you've got Jeremy Hellickson the next night, who's generally been a 5-inning pitcher. So as I say, the guys you're counting on, when they're not getting deep, then it just you're sitting there today going, well, do you need to make a roster move to get a fresh arm? And then you're looking at guys who don't have options. And, you know, Sammy Solis, he's not even eligible to come back to the roster yet because he hasn't been down 10 days. So these things start building and building. But, hey, at least they did win 3 out of 4, so there is that positive. And they've got this last week before the All-Star break playing the Pirates and the Mets, and this is an opportunity if they can, you know, get Rodriguez to pitch a couple of quality games and Hellickson, you know, win some games and maybe cut a couple of more off that deficit before the All-Star game's in D.C.
And Jags, July has not been kind to the Pirates. 2-5 on the month, including allowing 17 to the Dodgers in one game and 17 to the Phils in that span as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so hopefully the offense keeps going. I mean, I think you have to like what you're seeing with, you know, Rendon got a day off yesterday. He'd been swinging it well until the last week. Turner's been really good, and obviously Soto's been a nice presence, and Harper had a 3-8 game the other day. So, you know, there's certainly a lot going well coming off that Miami series that they had a couple of big offensive games, and, you know, the Mets are just a disaster right now, so hopefully this can be a good road trip.
All right, so before we let you go, do you expect them to, obviously Strasburg will be back after the All-Star break. That's a huge hole they're going to fill there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you expect Rizzo to make a move on one of these two positions, starting pitcher, catcher?
You know, if you had asked me a couple of weeks ago, I would have said catcher would have been number one and starting pitcher number two. But I think right now, I would say that flip-flops. To me, they're in desperate need of a starting pitcher, and I think he's going to go all out to try to do that. Now, whether that happens, I don't know, but I think that's got to be the number one priority because Matt Wieters did start his rehab assignment, and I think will probably return, if not in this Pittsburgh series, maybe in the New York series. So I think you got to see what Wieters brings to the table, and can he pick up some of that production at the position? So, yeah, I mean, obviously, you need more than 5 starting pitchers to get through an entire season, and they dipped down for Fetty and Rodriguez, but it looks like they need more to get to the finish line. So, to me, starting pitching is number one.
And is there a name that you think fits?
Well, I mean, the names are out there. To me, whether it's a veteran like Cole Hamels or a Jay Happ from Toronto, a left-handed pitcher to me would be good. You know, Chris Archer is a name you see floating out there. I know they're pretty much. I know Tampa Bay is probably looking at Nationals minor leaguers because of the possibility of the Wilson Ramos trade. So they're always pretty good trade partners. So those are some of the top names out there.
Hmm.
crazy if they trade for Wilson Ramos.
By the way,
that'd be an upgrade.
Yesterday is something you may never ever see again, Dave. I mean, I know you've seen a lot of baseball, but the Marlins having 19 straight singles. I mean, that is unbelievable, especially in this day and age, right?
We were commenting on that because everyone hits home runs and team batting averages are .230. I mean, guys don't hit singles anymore. I call it death by paper cut. It's like, can someone please get an extra base hit, hit a home run? I mean, at least it feels like they're doing real damage. But yeah, they had a really good approach, and it was amazing to see. And that was on the flip side where I think when they had 19 hits, I believe they only had 6 runs. And I look back to yesterday where the Nationals had 17 hits and 18 runs.
Right.
So that shows you how crazy baseball can be.
All right, Dave, always a pleasure. And just so you know, I did finish my rib during the interview.
Very good, Jay. It was just one.
Put a play-by-play guy on, let him talk, and you guys can feast.
That's why we did it. We planned it perfectly.
It's Dave Jagler, the voice of the
Nationals. Nice work.
All 106.7 The Fan. Thanks, pal.
Okay, see you guys.
Yep.
Dave thinks that they may go out and get a starting pitcher. We'll see.
Yes.
See what kind of work Rizzo is going to do here in the next 3 weeks, 2.5 weeks.
Look, last year he upgraded the bullpen big time.
Yes, he did.
And you look at what Doolittle's doing this year with the 22 saves, the 49 strikeouts with just 3 walks, makes the All-Star team. He did it right last year, so I'm sure that he'll do some work.
But Dave brought up a good
point.
Trade
deadline again.
The bullpen's been so taxed here of late because the starting pitchers just can't get out of the fifth inning.
Yep.
And tonight you've got Jeffrey Rodriguez. Now it's a fresh arm. But he's also a rookie, so you just don't know what to expect. He could be pounded for 8 hits and 4 runs.
Maybe he only
four
lasts
innings.
3 innings.
Right.
You don't know.
And then you're going right back to the pen. So they need Rodriguez to at least go 6 tonight.
All right, remember, coming up at 9:40, we'll talk to Luke Thomas. We'll talk some UFC 226 and MMA right here on The Junkies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Remember, you can join the Junks and 106.7 The Fan for our summer dress party. It's this upcoming Saturday, July 14th, at Whitlow's on Wilson. It all starts at 4 p.m. Whitlow's on Wilson, where it's good times with good friends and good food. We're still enjoying the food drop that they brought here about half an hour ago. So thank you again to Whitlow's on Wilson. We'll see you again soon this Saturday.
Yes, I saw Grandanny partaking in ribs.
As they should.
Of course.
Enjoy. There's plenty for everybody.
I started feeling a little guilty about having my ribs because I'm going to the dentist at 11. And I don't know if I have time to make it home for a quick brush and floss.
That's a good
point. So there might be some ribs stuck in the teeth.
I have an appointment this afternoon at 1:55 going to the dermatologist to take care of this hurting mole on my face.
Going to zap it?
How long
laser?
Have you had that?
It's only been around, I want to say, for about a year, roughly.
Really?
It's a new development on your boy Cakes' face.
Look at the skin tag I have.
That's a pretty bad skin
tag.
Hold
on, let me see.
Why don't you go get that taken care of?
I know. I have to.
Yeah.
Right there.
It's a big skin tag.
That's a big one. I've had it for a long time. I'm just too lazy to go to the dermatologist.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
It's hurting.
I know.
What do they do with skin tags?
I don't know.
I think they just numb it and they just cut it off.
You know what? I could not numb it and cut it off with a pair of dirty scissors and save you a lot of time and a trip to the doctor.
I mean, I could really cut it off. Just give me a steak knife and I could just cut it off.
Yeah, probably could.
But it would bleed for days, I'm sure.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing. We're afraid to cut off like a little skin tag.
Mm-hmm.
And wasn't there that guy who got caught in between rocks one time and he had to cut off his arm?
Yeah, he had
127 hours.
He had to saw off his arm. Like,
could you imagine that?
Like at the elbow.
True story.
With a... basically a dull pocket knife. Could you imagine?
No.
Makes
you've seen
queasy.
The movie, right?
127 hours.
Did you ever see that movie?
No.
Oh, you got to see that.
Well, it tells me again.
James Franco.
Don't go rock climbing in Utah. Especially with
especially by yourself.
Nobody
scratch
with
you. That off the list.
Now, I've been to a national park in Utah before on like a guided tour. I'm happy to do that. Yeah, I went with my kids' field hockey team.
Oh,
they went out to California. Yeah, but I'll do that.
You know another reason why
I'm not going to go off venture off by myself.
Every time I call my dermatologist, she's booked for months.
Really?
Yeah, it's hard to get
into these specialists. It's hard to get into these dermatology offices.
Then should I be concerned that I called mine and I got an appointment with the
quickness? Probably a hack.
I got mine with the quickness.
Probably a hack.
I mean, I got my appointment the next week. It didn't take much time at all.
Yeah,
it actually took no time at all.
Come to think of it, the last time I went, I have like this little issue where all of a sudden part of my beard stopped growing. Okay, so it's called alopecia. I mean, I never grow a beard, but now I like, because complete, there's like no hair. There's like two spots with absolutely nothing. No stubble. Looks weird. And that dermatologist, I got the appointment. He gave me some cream. It's done nothing.
Gabby, I got to take care of this, man.
That's hurt. It's making me uncomfortable.
Oh, doesn't hurt.
How do you get those?
Skin tags? I have no idea.
They're just normal. Sweat, I think.
Just being old and hurting?
Yeah, old and
probably.
Same way I got this mole on my face. I don't know how it happened.
I'm sure that has something to do with it, but it's not like I just got this in the past year. I've had this probably for 6-7 years.
Oh. Doesn't Teague I might get have grossed addressed. Out?
I don't know if she even knows I have it.
Pretty good communication.
She doesn't
over
really
there.
Care. She doesn't care.
Trust me, I'm not really going to get this taken care of because I care about it. My daughter, every time she sees it, she just starts staring at it like, when are you going to get that taken care of?
Right.
And I finally just said, I relented and said, I'm getting it done Monday.
Yeah.
So I might come in with a big old bandage on my face tomorrow. Who knows?
All right, we got Luke Thomas joining us in about 10 minutes to talk some UFC. Let's do a little 5 and 10. It might be an abbreviated version.
More like 1.5 stories in about 5 minutes.
I was going to say maybe 5 and maybe 5 and 7.
Yeah, former Washington Wizard point guard Brandon Jennings.
Oh, he's in the news for what?
He's been exiled a few times in the NBA career. Apparently, he's also a public enemy in his own gated community. According to TMZ, Brandon Jennings held an incredibly loud house party at his Los Angeles pad on the 4th of July, running into the wee hours the next day. No arrests were made, but it's believed 30 to 40 911 calls were made during a brief period of partying. His neighbors, though, say it's not an isolated incident. Apparently, he has a reputation for throwing a lot of all-night parties and treating his house like a nightclub.
Were kid and play at the house party? You didn't get that.
I got the delayed reaction.
And who was his DJ?
I know the millennials didn't get it.
Who was his DJ in house party?
Martin.
Martin Lawrence.
Yeah. Roosevelt Raider.
That's right.
Local guy.
Apparently, Jennings has been living it up. Ovi was in Russia with the Stanley Cup.
Yep.
And he sampled some caviar.
Hired thing. Caviar is
not
good.
Not a fan of caviar.
You're not
you
a big
are?
Fan of fish eggs.
I don't mind fish eggs like on my... Sushi.
Oh, I think
that's
it's
a form of caviar.
You've had caviar?
I've had caviar, yeah. I do not like it.
What does it taste like? Because I've never
salty.
Had it.
It's very salty, but it's not really the taste as much as the texture.
Well, they had a boatload of it because it filled up the top portion of the Stanley Cup. It was a lot of caviar.
Right. Is it like salty?
Yes. It's a little bit salty, but just knowing it's fish eggs, I just can't eat. I can't put it down.
I was surprised to see Koozie and Orlov hanging out with full-on smoke shows with the Stanley Cup over the weekend. I was really surprised.
And caviar obviously is not cheap.
No.
Very expensive.
Right.
And Thomas C. Mooney, who we talked earlier about today, who's representing Damonte Dodd in the rape case. But Thomas C. Mooney and I would have, we call it Dinner Club. I think I talked to you guys about Dinner Club.
I remember
that. We used to do Dinner Club, you know, years ago, but once a month we would rotate, and whoever was hosting the Dinner Club, you know, they would pick the restaurant, but they would pick the tab up. So the other person would just pound the check.
Right.
Because we knew that the other guy was paying.
Well, that's disrespectful.
Well,
just
I mean,
don't order your regular,
yeah,
normal
but they're friends.
Food.
I know, but we were stupid.
Right.
It ends up even in the end.
We bought a dumb condo in Ocean City.
Yeah, I know. It's young and dumb.
But I remember going to a restaurant called the Russia House, which I think is still in D.C.
Isn't that song Young, Dumb, and Broke?
I don't know.
Russia House is great, by the way. Dumb. But we went to Russia House and we ordered, you know, dinner.
Don't expect ice in your drink.
And we did have ice in the cocktails, but he ordered caviar.
Okay.
And caviar is like, I don't know, it's $100 to eat, and it's like this big.
Yeah, it's tiny.
And so that's what he would do. He would just pound the check on me because he knew that I was paying, so he ordered caviar, which is awful.
So you got salty from the salty fish eggs.
Yes, of course. Don't ever eat caviar.
Story from ProFootballTalk.com about our favorite Redskins wide receiver, Josh Doctson. Doctson said on Saturday, every new year, I'm looking to be better.
That's a story.
He believes he's going to have a huge third year.
Oh, I always love betting on Josh Doctson.
He hasn't had
catch totals.
He hasn't had one in 2 years, 100-yard receiving game. And he hasn't caught more than 4 passes in any one game.
All right, I'm willing to bet. Willing to make wagers here.
502 yards receiving last year. Single game high of 81.
What's the over-under? What's the over-under on yards?
For me, I'm going to go with catches first. And if anybody wants to nibble on any of these deals, feel free.
All right.
The over-under on catches for Doctson in 2018, in my opinion, is 55.
Oh, that's exactly what I would set it at.
55.
What did he have last year? What did he have last year?
20. I don't have the exact catches. I've got 502 receiving yards.
35
catches. 35? It just has 20 more.
I would go under that.
Is there any injury caveat?
Oh, if I were to bet the over, I would have to get an injury caveat. He'd have to play in 13-plus games.
All right, you've got Crowder there. You've got Richardson there. Hopefully Reed. I'm going to go under 55. Can we make the bet right now?
You want to take the over.
I thought you just said it. I thought you were going to... I thought you were offering it.
You're taking the under.
Yeah.
Do you not understand the concept?
No, I understand the concept. I don't usually book the bets. I usually make the bets.
But you offered to book it.
Okay, I'm offering it. You're gonna go over?
I would of course go over.
All right.
It's more comfortable.
Can you put it in the bet book?
It's more comfortable for me when you're the book.
I got it.
I don't like booking bets. Right, I like making bets.
All right, I'll put an injury. All right, what's the injury caveat?
He has to play in at least 13 games.
All right, I'll give it to you. 13 games.
55.
And
over.
You've got over 55 catches.
For how much?
I'm the bookie. You tell me.
$10.
Put it in.
Ooh. $10. We're already making Skins bets.
Love it. You want to do a yardage bet too?
Not crazy about yardage. How about touchdowns? Let's do touchdowns for Doctson.
All right.
He does like to catch touchdowns. He doesn't catch a lot of balls.
What did he have, 6 last year? I'm guessing on that, obviously.
Drabby, can you get us a
6?
6.
All right. I'm the bookie.
You're the bookie. You throw out the number.
6.5.
Over. I'll take it for another $10.
All right, $10.
Wow. I'm heavily in on Josh. Why am I so heavy on Josh Doctson?
I don't know. You're going to lose. You're going to lose at least one of those.
You know what? I think I'm doing Redskins pregame. So I'll just shuttle off some of that money to you.
Jason, so you have under 6 touchdowns.
6.5.
At 6.5.
So he needs to find the end zone 7 times for me to win.
You're done on that. He's not getting 7 touchdowns.
He was 6 close last year.
Come on.
A nubs amount of catches.
Same injury caveat?
Yes, of course.
13 games. Got to play 13 games.
All right. Turns out the 5 and 10 was the 3 and 7.
That's fine. That works.
But with a couple of bets. So some action there.
That's way
you don't have
in.
A closer? You don't have a closer for us?
I mean, Carmelo might go to the Lakers.
Oh, that's a perfect fit.
Or the Rockets. They're battling out for Melo.
OKC wants him gone.
And a LeBron mural was already vandalized in L.A. Shocker. There you go.
They don't want him there?
I don't know.
All right, coming up next, we're going to get into UFC 226. It was a historic event on Saturday night with Daniel Cormier winning the heavyweight championship to go along with his light heavyweight championship. Luke Thomas, the host of the Luke Thomas Show on SiriusXM Rush 93, joins us next as we talk some MMA. Before we get to our next interview, we're going to hook up the 10th caller with tickets to go see Common and Queen Latifah coming July 20th to Wolf Trap. Tickets on sale now through wolftrap.org or by calling 877-WOLF-TRAP. Details at thefandc.com/contest. All right, our next guest is Luke Thomas. He hosts the Luke Thomas Show on SiriusXM Rush 93. He joined us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline, and I saw Cakes. You actually had a little interaction with him over the weekend. Because he was trolling in Vegas wearing his Caps jersey.
I retweeted Adam Hill, who tweeted, "Troll game strong with @LThomasNews, who chose to wear a Caps jersey to UFC 226 at T-Mobile Arena. home of the Vegas Golden Knights, the Stanley Cup runner-up Vegas Golden Knights. Good job, Luke. Well done.
Runner-up.
I applaud that, sir.
I actually had a broadcast early that day at noon at this bar that was like right outside the T-Mobile Arena that was at the unofficial home of the Vegas Golden Knights. So I wore that from noon that time all the way to the fights, all the way to our post-fight show. People in Vegas got bitter. It was great.
Sounds awesome.
Now, Luke, you're in the prognostication business to an extent. You used to give Jason picks until he soured that relationship.
No.
I always bring this up.
I know. It's so stupid. By the way, it's coming back today because I just saw that the lines for UFC 227, so we will talk about
the lines. It's already out?
Yeah, when is it?
Yeah,
this
come
weekend?
Out early.
Is that this weekend?
No, 227 is not until August 4th.
All right, but we're going to talk about them at the end of the interview. Go ahead, JP.
Anyway, what I wanted to say is what did you think was the likelihood of Daniel Cormier pulling off the upset? I thought it was an upset.
Well, that's a funny thing to ask because if you looked at where the money was coming in, most of the money thought that Stipe was going to win. So Cormier had started at about a plus 180 underdog. And I didn't mind that he was coming in as an underdog given that he was stepping up in weight and that Stipe was up to that time the most decorated heavyweight champion the UFC had seen. But I felt like this was Cormier's fight to lose from the moment they announced it. He doesn't look like it. If you just look at him physically, he's never going to win any bodybuilding contests. But he's one of the best athletes I've ever covered, period. He's incredible. And he has a real big speed advantage. He puts incredible pressure on these heavyweights. These heavyweights who are a little bit smaller than the average heavyweight, but quicker, more agile, and have good wrestling backgrounds, man, they are demons. They're demons. So to me, did I think he was going to knock him out in the first? No. But I was very confident that Daniel Cormier was going to win.
Yeah, and the way he did it, you know, Stipe had his moments, but he had him in a clinch and just caught him with the right hand and basically put him to sleep there for a few seconds.
Dude, he's got big power at that weight. You know, 205, that's his common – he hits people like that all the time. He uses the left hand for a collar tie, which sort of means around the back of the neck. And then his right hand, he just sort of drives the punches as he brings the head down or he drives the punches to the body. This is a way he sets up all different kinds of attacks, takedowns, different ways to fire an underhook and turn someone, press them, whatever. But at 205, it may hurt guys, but it just gets them to react. It doesn't put them down. When he's 250 pounds and he's letting his body weight more naturally settle, he's out there breaking people's jaws, man. It's incredible to watch it. So to me, what's kind of interesting about it is if John Jones can get his act together and they can put a third fight together at heavyweight, the fight would be completely different. I've never seen Cormier. I mean, I have seen him that good when he used to be a heavyweight, but I haven't seen him that good in a long time.
So, Luke, I was kind of poking fun at myself that I didn't go out to watch UFC and I didn't have people over, which a lot of times I do. I actually just ordered it and watched it by myself.
Yeah, welcome to my life.
The payoff was great, but right before the payoff, what they dubbed the co-main event was supposed to be a battle of these two monsters, guys who knock guys out on the regular in Francis Ngannou and Lewis. And it was the worst fight I've ever seen in my life. What was going on there?
Yeah, it was. That wasn't merely a bad fight. That was a historically bad fight. I mean, truly all-time epic levels of awful. I don't know how else to describe it. I'll give a pass to one of the guys. The bald guy, Derek Lewis, has had a lingering back injury. And if you actually talk to him in the lead-up to this fight, he said he was managing it, but then with these back injuries, if you've ever had one, and I've been dealing with one for a long time, sometimes they can pop up when you least expect it, when the smallest tweak sets everything off. So he needs to get that in order. I will say that he needs to do whatever he can to get fixed, and he bears responsibility in that regard. But the other side is the really weird one. Francis Ngannou, you guys got to remember, his last fight was for the title. He lost to Stipe Miocic, and he got that title shot because he was literally, I mean, he was scoring not just knockouts, but the most vicious ones imaginable. He has a knockout over Alistair Overeem, literally the best heavyweight kickboxer who's ever competed in the UFC, and he snapped his head back so far, I thought he decapitated him. There's a picture of him hitting his head back, and it looks like one of those comic book store frames where, you know, a guy's head just looks like it's just getting stretched out all the way. And then he comes into this fight, and he didn't look that good. There's two theories, basically, very quickly. One is that both guys are counter fighters, so you're never going to get good action that way. The other one is if you put a guy like Ngannou in a fight against a high-level opponent too early and it goes 25 minutes, which it did against Stipe Miocic, and the guy gets beat on like that round after round, they don't come back the same. I wonder if it's the latter, actually, more than the former.
So just psychological that, you know, he lost and he doubts himself. But, I mean, he didn't throw any punches. I think he threw 11 punches the whole match. 15 minutes, he threw 11 punches.
Right, so that's the sign. No, he landed 11 punches. But
okay, landed.
You know, okay, but even then, you should be landing 11 punches in the first minute.
I would say he didn't throw any with conviction. There weren't any hard shots.
But you have to ask yourself why that would be the case, right? Either you're injured, which he didn't say, or you just had a terrible strategy, or you got beat on in your last fight so bad that you don't want to throw them anymore, and a lot of these guys don't realize it until they get in there.
Or Cakes has the counter theory that they're throwing it, that they're making cash
they colluded.
Somehow.
Here's what happened, Luke. They colluded. They got together with some Russian mobsters and pooled a bunch of money in a draw where they're going to throw less than 50 punches.
I think if you're going to collude in broad daylight, you got to be good about it. That would be a bad way to conceal a bad idea, you know, like so blatantly doing that. I'm sure we've seen thrown fights. I really do believe that, but I bet you didn't recognize it.
All right, so Luke, so I guess 227 at the Staples Center in L.A., but it's not till August 4, but I'm going to get some picks from you.
I know you're a big T.J. Dillashaw fan, Jason.
You got T.J. Dillashaw, you've got Demetrius, these are just the favorites. T.J. Dillashaw, Demetrius Johnson, Alex Gustafson, Renato Moicano, I could be pronouncing that wrong, and Pedro Munhoz. So talk to me about any of those five. Do you like any of those guys to be upset? Should I parlay a couple of them? What do you think?
Ooh, Gustafson, I would bet the house on.
Okay.
He's one of the best guys in the world, and he's facing a guy who's got a bunch of legal issues outside the cage. He was very, very good, but probably not as good as him. In the main event, it's an interesting one. I would side with TJ Dillashaw as well. I know it's going chalk there, but the reason why is that he's having a rematch with a guy, and that guy is a former training partner, but a guy he beat in his last fight.
Cody Garbrandt.
Garbrandt, who's, yeah. Trust me when I tell you that was a very good fight, the first one. But the problem is when you have rematches back to back like that, and there's not a lot of space between them, you have to ask yourself what's different.
Right. Well, he's not a big favorite. He's not a big favorite. Dillashaw's just minus 130. It's basically a flip of a coin there.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know how much money you want to lay on it, but I would definitely lead. Who is Moicano fighting? I forgot about
Moicano
that.
Moicano is Cub Swanson.
Man, I like Cub, and I would lean with Moicano on that one. Cub has been through the ringer a lot. He has a lot of miles on him. Very heavy hitter. But it's by the way, when it's an R in Portuguese, it's an H, so it's Renato Moicano.
Oh, okay, sorry.
I would lean. He is a very, very good up-and-comer out of Brazil who can do everything, including slug it out. Swanson's got an uphill fight on that one.
All right. Joined by Luke Thomas, host of the Luke Thomas Show, SiriusXM Rush 93, amongst many other things. All right, so let's talk the Brock Lesnar-Daniel Cormier fight. First of all, as kind of a purist, I think you're a purist, or you're certainly somebody that loves combat sports, did you like the Brock-Cormier kind of WWE-ish back and forth?
Look, all respect to Chad Dukes, pro wrestling is dumb, okay? I totally agree. I don't like it. I cannot understand why adults like it, but they do. Okay, they do. So here's the thing. I have a weird relationship, not with Brock Lesnar, we don't know each other, but what I mean to say is he's the kind of person who pulls in that pro wrestling audience, and other wrestler or other fighters around him begin to adopt these weird antics in order to sell fights. I don't care about any of those antics, so people can say what they want about what they saw on Saturday. It's going to sell tremendous amount of pay-per-views, but Brock Lesnar has always been an incredibly exciting force inside mixed martial arts. Like when he goes up there and they're pushing each other and it's all so phony, I just tune it all out, because even with a year layoff coming off of USADA suspension, or 2 years really, I know he's going to be incredible. I think it's exciting for the sport. When he came in the first, frankly, I don't think I'd have a job in the sport were it not for the amount of energy he put in and how much the media responded when he was making that historic run to be a UFC heavyweight champion. So, like, the pro wrestling stuff is just, you know, it's so lame, but it's going to work to make a big fight, and I genuinely think that Brock Lesnar is one of the most interesting characters I've ever had the, you know, frankly, privilege of covering.
And he has a great background, whether it's wrestling, and he said former UFC champion. All right, 10 seconds or less, because we got to go. Does Conor McGregor fight in 2018?
Yes, his legal problems are going to force him back in there, absolutely.
Very good. All right, Luke. Always love having you on.
Appreciate it, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
Keep rocking that red. Wear that cap sweater, Luke.
For the record, yes. I parlayed Gustafson and Moicano.
Fad. You hope they're fatties.
200 paid me 112.
Like it.
Okay, that's not bad. All right, we got to get out of here for Cakes. Bish, EB, who's on vacay.
Bing.
I'm JP. We'll see you tomorrow. Grant and Danny next on The Fan.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.